Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and today I've invited a wonderful guest to the program, author Shala Abdullah. Noted as a word artist by critics, Shala is an award-winning author and designer based in Austin, Texas. Her creative work focuses on the strengths and weaknesses of Pakistani women and their often unconventional choices in life. Shala's new novel, Saffron Dreams, published by Modern History Press, explores the tragedy of 9/11 from the perspective of a Muslim widow. She actually received a grant from the Hobson Foundation for that body of work. Now, her debut book, Beyond the Khayyam Wall, is a collection of stories about Pakistani women struggling to find their individualities despite the barriers imposed by society. The collection won the Norum Bega Jury Prize for Outstanding Fiction and the DIY Festival Award, among other accolades. Shala has published several short stories, articles, and essays for various publications, including Women's Own, She, Fashion Collection, Suleika, and Dallas Child. And for more information, you can go to Shala's wonderful website, shalaabdullah.com. And let me just spell that for you. It's S-H-A-I-L-A-A-B-D-U-L-L-A-H. So that said, welcome to the program, Shala.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, well, thank you for joining us. You know, your book just came out. I know you did a internet book tour yesterday, so this is hot off the press. And I have to say, it's just such a beautiful presentation. It's a beautiful book.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I put my heart and soul into it.
You can tell. I know that you are a graphic designer and that you actually designed this book cover yourself.
Yes, and Modern History Press was really nice about it. When I asked them that I wanted to design my own cover, they willingly agreed, and I think a cover does so much for a book. It's such a big selling point that I really wanted to design that.
So tell us then what this particular cover is saying about the story inside.
The cover shows this woman who's hiding half of her face. And if you read the novel, you will see that there are many points where Arisa, the main character of the novel, comes to certain points in life where she is she has to make certain choices that are about her faith, about herself, about her child, and that she has to hide in certain ways or present herself in a certain way to make things happen in her life. That is something that I tried to convey through the cover.
It's beautiful. It must feel great to have this book out, your second book in print.
It feels really good.
Yeah.
But it's still so early on that we'll see how it goes.
I know. So it sounds to me that you're predominantly writing about women and for women. Is this so?
Yes, it is. You know, being a woman and being from a third world country like Pakistan, I try to bring the issues, the problems, the good things in life, the flavor of the culture out, and it's just, I convey it better through a woman's character.
Do you think that you'll go into other directions in the future, or are you pretty much set with this?
Maybe I'll someday write from the perspective of a man, too. And, in fact, the other book, the third book that I'm thinking of is probably going to be about street children of Pakistan and would probably be written in the perspective of a man.
Oh.
So we'll see how that one goes.
Interesting. So you're from Pakistan.
Yes, I am.
How long have you been in the United States?
I moved to U.S. in 1995 and lived in California for 5 years. And in 2000, I moved to Austin. So it's been a couple of years.
You have been here a little while. Well, so now tell me how the idea for Saffron Dreams actually came about. You know, that you really base this around the 9/11 attack, which was in 2001. So that was probably very soon after you moved to Austin.
Right, exactly. I think it was the very next year, in fact.
Mm.
I think the tragedy of 9/11 was such a great shock to the American psyche. And some of that anger, I saw that was directed towards those who shared the race and the religion of the terrorists, especially those Muslims who publicly exhibited symbols of their faith, like wearing a veil or beards or even their own names. And with Saffron Dreams, my intent was to convey that, you know, most Muslims live real, ordinary lives, and their lives are guided by the general principles that we all live by, like goodness and peace. And, you know, it is also important to note that Quran, the Holy Quran, the book of Muslims, also prohibits aggression and notes that true Islamic values are based on peace, harmony, resolution, and forgiveness. And, you know, one also has to recognize that terrorists do not represent the mainstream Islam.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing the amount of discrimination and just obvious lack of education about other cultures. It really came out in our society at that time.
There is more awareness now than there was before. You know, I mean, in the beginning, it felt like media was instilling that fear in the hearts of the nation. But, you know, if you've noticed lately, they've also started bringing real good role models out and who talk on panels and good researchers and respected scholars. But there still needs to be a lot more dialogues with positive role models. You know, I've talked about it before, but role models like His Highness the Aga Khan, Karen Armstrong, who's a British author, and Dr. Ali Asani, who's a Harvard professor. You know, role models like those that bring out the best of Islam, what is Islam all about? I think there is a great need in the U.S. for various religious entities to come together and have this dialogue, so that we can build bridges of understanding and tolerance among our society.
Mm-hmm. Do you see that we're making progress in that direction? As the world is really opening up, the internet is just such a wealth of information, and it seems like generally we're opening up to a more global society.
I think we're getting better and better at it, and I think the only direction that I see is it's going to improve. I think a lot of people have stepped in. They are making it their mission to project the right face of Islam. And I think it's going to get better. American as a society is so accepting of other cultures, and we were there before. We're going to get there again.
Mm-hmm. And really, the U.S. is a melting pot.
It's a melting pot, yes. And I mentioned that in my book, that it's really a melting pot. But after 9/11, I think a lot of people started to get this fear in their hearts of really who have we accepted in society and where are we headed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's time to come back to the basics, that really ordinary Muslims lead real ordinary lives. They have nothing to do with what happened at 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
This is not the true face of Islam.
Mm-hmm. It's just a small group of
misguided souls.
Misguided souls. Well put. Well put. So now, Saffron Dreams, really, to me, this seems like a love story. So tell us about Arissa and Faizan and what really happens through the course of this book.
Well, in the novel, the protagonist, Arissa, she's a veil-wearing Muslim woman, and she loses her husband in the tragedy of 9/11. And she's faced with some real tough choices in life, because she finds that, you know, her belief, her faith is questioned in the aftermath, and whereas she herself is a victim of the tragedy. So time and again, she's faced with defending her faith and ultimately is forced to make some decisions in her life to ward off some of that negative attention. But for her, you know, her true love was her husband, and losing him was very, very damaging to her, and it takes her a while to recover from that. And then in the end, having a disabled child helps in the healing process, because she finds that, you know, just the amount of time she has to spend with a child that is disabled helps her in the healing process.
It seems to me that there's two things going on with Arissa. One, she's going through this amazing self-growth process, and then she's also going through a healing journey.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I think having a child with disability compounds her fear of discrimination and forces her to make certain decisions in the novel, as we find out. I don't want to give out.
Don't give out too much.
Tell the story for the listeners.
No, it was interesting, though, that you did decide to have a child with a disability. You know, one more thing that Arissa had to kind of deal with and work out for herself.
And in the end, it turns out to be the best thing for her.
Interesting. So now Faizan, he was Muslim. He dies in this story. And, you know, readers are finding this out quickly, so we're not spoiling anything here. So why was it important for him to die?
I think having him die in the attack shows that terror has no religion nor any race, that terror is terror. It has no connections to any faith. And having Faizan, a Muslim man, die in the attacks shows that.
Mm-hmm. Now, what happens? This was an arranged marriage with Faizan and Arissa?
Yes, it was an arranged marriage.
Okay. Now, that's typical for the culture, right?
Well, not always, but typically, I would say that the trend is becoming more so now that, you know, people choose their own mates, but real traditional families still go through arranged marriages, and even modern families do. If you're born in that society, you grow up with this mindset that one day you might have an arranged marriage. And Arissa's family is pretty broad-minded. If she had chosen her own mate, they would have been accepting of it.
Mm.
But she ends up having an arranged match.
Do you bring the whole idea of dating and being with another man into this story?
I do.
Oh, okay.
I do.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see how we can do this without giving too much away.
Well, no, it's interesting because I think there is a misperception about the culture that it's all arranged marriages, and it just seems like, you know, Arissa is just exploring so many of the boundaries of herself and her culture and what it is to be a woman.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, dating is not a normal custom back home, but she lives in a newer society.
Mm-hmm.
And she also grew up in a very affluent family, which was a progressive circle, and it wasn't uncommon for men and women to meet in various settings.
Mm-hmm.
But in the course of the novel, we see that, you know, although she adapted well to the idea of dating, that intimacy still is a challenge to her.
Okay, interesting. Now, Arissa and Faizan, they both grew up in Pakistan. They were first-generation Americans. So what are some of the challenges that they face that must be common to anyone from a distinct culture moving to America?
You know, it depends on who the person is. In case of Arissa and Faizan, I think they didn't have a lot of challenges being educated, knowing about the society that they were entering. I think some of the challenges that I show with Arissa are challenges like, you know, driving is a very challenging thing to her, which was, I kind of modeled that after me, because when I moved to U.S., that was a biggest challenge for me, to learn to drive in a newer way. Learning to know streets by, you know, directions and all was just so challenging. And to this day, it's a bit of a challenge.
Isn't that funny? Well, how did you get around when you were in Pakistan?
Well, most of the time we had drivers who drove us around.
Lucky you.
The men of the family.
Yeah.
So, you know, you grow up with a mindset of who wants to just remember directions? And, you know, after a while, that part of your brain never really truly develops. And so you're faced with that challenge in your newer society when you moved to U.S.
Mm-hmm. And you moved into a city, too. It would have been different, I imagine, if you would have moved into a small town and learned how to drive there. But very different than city driving. Well, let me ask you, Charlotte, have you ever experienced racism or discrimination?
I get that asked a lot, and I have say no. I have never faced any discrimination or racism. But yes, I have heard in the news, and I've heard about people who have experienced it, but I've been fortunate never to have come across anything like that.
That is so amazing. Why do you think that is? Do you think it's the areas that you've decided to situate yourself here that are more progressive?
I think I've been very fortunate. It can be due to the areas that we reside in and we roam in, but I think, for the most part, I think we are very fortunate. And also the fact that when you look at me, I don't wear a veil or anything like that, but, you know, there are other Muslim women who do. And they become sort of like very easy targets for people who are out to get people like that. And so those people face a bigger challenge than a person like me does.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Hi there. Are you looking for new ways to promote your book? Why not consider being interviewed live? With the huge impact internet radio as well as podcasting is making in our society, your voice can now be heard worldwide. Let Juanita at Inside Scoop Live create the necessary steps for you. You will not only receive a web page of your own, but your interview will be available for MP3 download and RSS feed. As well, your interview will be posted on venues such as iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, Podcast Alley, and the Inside Scoop Live blog. Go to InsideScoopLive.com today for more information. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Just to remind you, I'm speaking today with Shala Abdullah, author of Saffron Dream, and you can find out more about Shala through her website, shalaabdullah.com. It has to be such a big decision for a woman living in this country whether to wear the veil or not.
But as I said, you know, every day we're moving in the right direction. Society is becoming accepting again. We're going to get there. We're going to get there. We're going to get to a point where people of different faith would still be able to exhibit symbols of their faith and be okay, be safe. This society will give them that back.
I believe that too. And I think it's just so very important to really preserve, you know, cultures like that, and not have everyone, you know, eventually looking the same. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, diversity makes us richer.
Absolutely. Do you belong to any organizations that are helping to educate the public about religious or cultural diversity?
I don't belong to any organizations like that.
I'm wondering what is available out there.
I am sure there are many, many organizations like that. I know of one that Dr. Ibu Patel is heading. It's the Chicago-based Interfaith Youth Corps. And what their role is, they bring different religious entities together and have dialogues, learn more about each other. And I think that's a step in the right direction.
That's great. Now, tell me where the title of this book, Saffron Dreams, what does that mean?
Well, if you read the book, you'll find out that the book is full of symbolism. And saffron is one of those symbols. In Pakistani cooking, it's used for flavor and its distinct aroma. So saffron is an exotic spice. It's derived from the stigmas of saffron flower. And in the novel, it is used symbolically to represent the extraordinary experiences, extraordinary encounters in life. And since the novel revolves around Arisa's unusual plan of finishing her husband's book, I decided to call it Her Saffron Dreams.
That's beautiful. You know, you mentioned the symbolism. It seems like symbolism and bright colors and hidden meanings like that are really a part of the culture.
Yes, yes. And you try to bring that flavor out in your writing as much as you can.
Well, I mean, you are getting such amazing reviews and amazing response from your writing. So where do you think you're going to be going in the future? What are your plans for your writing career?
My plan is to keep on writing, but I want to keep on designing as well. Design and writing to me are an integral part of my life.
Well, you're an artist.
Exactly. I can't do without one or the other. So I think what I'll keep on doing is follow the muse wherever it leads me, through art or writing.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you do any painting, or is it more graphic design over the
I country? Used to as a teenager, but as I grew up and made design a career choice, I do more commercial and graphic design and web work than fine art.
So when you sit down to write a story, like let's talk about Saffron Dreams, did you have an idea of beginning to end, the complete vision of your work, or did you just have a slice of that and sit down and it all unfolded from there?
I think I'm getting a little bit more disciplined about my writing now than I was before when I wrote the collection. What I now do is I try to plot the entire novel and sit down and write an outline of it before I even start developing it. When I talk about my writing, I talk about, I don't know if you've ever worked in Photoshop, but in Photoshop you can do layer upon layer upon layer of a design until you get it just right. Writing is also like that. You write something and you go back and you refine it, and you go back and you refine it some more, and you keep on refining it until you get it just right. So, you know, this book also went through several drafts until I was completely happy with it.
How long did that process take?
The actual raw writing, 9 months. Mm-hmm. But the editing process, year and a half.
Isn't it amazing that, I mean, I hear that consistently from authors, that the editing process is so much longer than the original draft.
It is. And I think I tend to be such a perfectionist in those things that what I ended up doing was to gather groups of beta readers. So I had a first group go through and hash it out and give me their feedback on it, and then I went and worked on it some more, and then I presented it to another set of beta readers, and they went through it and gave me their responses. Mm-hmm. So it was quite a long process. It takes a while to read 75,000 words.
Oh, it does, yes. But what a great experience and a learning experience for you.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. It was a great learning experience, and I learned a lot. I learned a lot in writing this book, in researching this book, especially about the special disability that Orisa's child has,
mm-hmm.
Charge syndrome.
I've never heard of that.
You know, I had not heard about it either, but my sister is a geneticist at Baylor University mm-hmm. in Houston, and she is working on this syndrome. She told me initially about it, and what I decided to do was to have the character in the novel have this syndrome. And to do the research for it, I went to some parents who had children with Charge syndrome, and around five parents ended up filling out the questionnaire I gave them. Then I went back and we researched some more and we talked some more, and they gave me their children's picture. And so it was a really long process in trying to understand where those parents are coming from, mm-hmm. what kind of challenges they faced in their daily lives
mm-hmm.
dealing with a special needs child. And I tried to bring that out in the writing.
I think it's just wonderful that you are bringing awareness to such a little known disability. And obviously that research process must have just been tearing at your heart a little bit. I mean, that's, yeah.
Looking at those children, and you know what touched me most is the dedication of these parents who so aggressively go out and seek help for their children, who stand up for their children, who want the best for their children,
mm-hmm.
and the dedication that they have to look after these kids.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing to watch.
Mm-hmm. Now, is that a terminal?
No, it's not.
Yeah.
CHARD is actually an acronym of multiple syndromes. I don't know what each one of them stands for.
Oh.
I mean, I can't tell you offhand, but
okay.
It's a rare pattern of birth defects that occurs in about 1 in every 9 to 10,000 births worldwide.
Mm.
So that's the reason you don't hear about it too much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So interesting. Now, your first book, Beyond the Cayenne Wall, it was a collection of short stories?
Yes.
And so what did you experience or learn and incorporate into this new writing, into your new book, from writing that one?
I think writing is such an evolving process that every new thing that you write, you want to make it better than your last one. And I know there are some really great stories in Beyond the Cayenne Wall, but I feel that the writing, your writing just keeps on evolving.
Yeah.
Every time you write a new piece, it gets better and better.
Mm. Wonderful. We're looking forward to book three. I know you just came out with a second book, and that's all.
I've not even started writing the third one yet.
You haven't yet.
I just have these ideas germinating in my head, and I will pen it down. I don't know when, but I will. Life is too busy right now.
Mm-hmm. When the time is right, it will start coming out of you.
When the time is right. Even for this, writing this novel was kind of a challenge to try and juggle so many things in life. I have a full-time career as a designer.
Mm-hmm.
And I do a lot of voluntary work.
And you have a family.
I have a family. I have a 5-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
So a lot of this writing was occurring in the wee night hours. And I remember one night my child was telling me, there were nights that I stayed up all night writing. So one day my child tells me, and her room backs to my study where I work, and she tells me, "Mama, can you just do one click tonight?" Just one click.
That
I felt so sorry for her.
Oh, that's so funny.
Looking is keeping her away.
You're teaching her quite a work ethic, Shayla. That is so funny. Well, so do you see a growing interest in multicultural literature like this?
I think so. I think at a time when much of the world, I won't say most, but much of the world associates Islamic culture with, you know, oppression and terror, the new genre that's emerging is tackling, you know, such ordinary things in life like love, like hope, women's issues. And I still find that there is a great thirst amongst readers really to learn more about Muslims and what drives them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the interesting thing is even the followers of mainstream Islam can't tell the readers what drives terrorism. And we are as clueless as the rest of the readers, but, you know, as I say, keep on reading. You'll probably learn something about the true face of Islam.
Yeah, that is so, so interesting. Well, I definitely hope that you just continue on, find a little bit of time in your day to continue writing. I think that you're putting out such great work, and it really, there's such a need for this kind of novel today.
Thank you.
Yeah. So your website, beautifully designed by yourself, is shalaabdullah.com. So both of your books can be purchased through your website?
Right. Both of the books are available on the website, including the excerpts, reviews, and descriptions of the books. There's a media kit with the book photos available there as well. For Saffron Dreams, I have a reading guide that book clubs could use, and there's a contact information of mine there as well. I always encourage fans and friends to contact me and talk about the books. I'm always happy to hear from fans, and I'm always responsive too.
You'll email back.
I email back.
Good for you. You know, it's interesting. We didn't really touch on the fact that this would be such a great book for a book club. I mean, this is a perfect fit for a book club reading.
Well, I hope book clubs pick this book because I think it's such an important book to read. Just to know more about Muslims and, you know, just to know the true lives of ordinary Muslims, you know, the ones that are always hidden from the nightly news, right? Those ordinary Muslims who spark no conflicts and who lead very, very ordinary lives, just like you and me.
Absolutely. Yeah, there is definitely a need for showing that, because I think a lot of people just don't know. They just don't know. Wonderful, Shala. It's been so great talking with you. And did you have any final thoughts? We covered so much today, but did you have anything that you wanted to leave listeners with?
You know, the one thing that I wanted to touch upon is the number of ideas and concepts I explore in this novel, and there are four of them. The very first one is preservation of one's identity, culture, and faith. The second one is looking discrimination in the eye and not being deterred by it. And third is shooting for a goal you set for yourself and work towards it no matter what. And that the fourth is that terror has no religion, and the ideologies of Islam are very different from that of the 2001 attackers. And underlying all that is the belief that you can overcome grief. And you do move on in life after a loss.
Beautiful. This is a very deep book. Thank you, Shala.
Thank you.
It's been wonderful talking with you. You take care, and we'll talk again.
All right. Thank you.
You bet. All right, listeners, that's Shala Abdullah. Her new book, Saffron Dreams, out now on Modern History Press, is on shelves. You can go to Shala's website, shalaabdullah.com, to have a look. She's got so much information up there. You can also find this book on Amazon and at your local bookstore. And do check out her first book, Beyond the Cayenne Wall. It's a wonderful, wonderful compilation of stories. So I want to thank you so much for tuning in to Inside Scoop Live today. I'm Juanita Watson, and until next time.